Connecting community through business, building relationships, and building Waterloo Region. 570 News presents Business to Business, powered by Cowan Insurance Group. Here are your hosts, Ian McLean of the KW Chamber of Commerce and Greg DeRocher of the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance, and joined in studio by Luke Schultz. He, of course, is our executive producer extraordinaire, and we are not joined in studio this week by Greg DeRocher, but as God would have it, we have him on the line from far away, snowy Toronto. Welcome to the show, Gregory.
It's great. It's great to be here, but it's also great to be connected via technology that we have, that we often use to do our show, because you and I are busy people. We're all over the place.
Now, and we also have a limit of only once per week do we get together personally, and we use that up this week because on Wednesday we had a wonderful point of view luncheon with that we partnered with the Immigration Partnership of Waterloo Region. And we had two great segments to that. One was Perrin Beattie, our good friend, regular on the show, and the president CEO of Canadian Chamber of Commerce, was the keynote speaker talking about immigrants and the economy. And so we were together on Wednesday, and it was a fabulous event. But we also took the opportunity to Shanghai Mr. Perrin Beattie, and we have him talking about the reason he was in town, but also on a variety of other issues. That's always a great interview. So we'll have him in later in the show. And I know you saw him yesterday where you are at the Ontario Economic Summit.
Yeah, he went, he had a great session, about 45 minutes long, being interviewed more or less by Vashi Kapelis from CBC's
Power and Politics. Power
and
Politics.
And it was a fantastic back and forth. However, as you know, whenever you ask a question of Perrin Beattie, you will get the long answer every single time, and it doesn't matter what subject matter it is. He always has an eloquent way of being able to deliver sensibility and calmness and rationality. He was on top of his game, to say the least, down here, as he was at the Point of View luncheon on Wednesday.
Yeah, and so it's always for everyone listening, the Ontario Economic Summit is a major conference that the Ontario Chamber of Commerce runs every November. And it's 2.5 days. I've had events this week, but you've been down carrying the torch for Waterloo Region. But it is a great, they've great speakers and great panelists. I think they had Bruce Croxon and I think Brett Wilson and a variety of folks that talking about everything from startup industry in Canada, a variety of different things, and always a worthwhile conference.
Well, it's been a fantastic conference, probably the best Ontario Economic Summit I've been to, and I've been to about five of them now. I think what lent itself was normally it was in Niagara region. Now being in Toronto, I think you have a little bit better access to some of these incredible keynote speakers. And yesterday we also had David Frum. And David Frum, of course, is a former speechwriter for George W. Bush. He's now the senior editor of The Atlantic. And is an outspoken critic of the Trump administration, and I think Trumpocracy was his recent book that he put out, and talking about the destruction of the American Republic.
And the conservative movement.
And, you know, David Frum, he doesn't hide behind the fact that he is a Republican. He's a conservative by nature. That's his forte. Obviously, he was George W. Bush's speechwriter, but I think more importantly, what he talked about was the world's the anxiety, I think, from his perspective in the world, of how many leaders, and in particular the U.S. leadership, is dealing with its global partners and what kind of anxiety that could present for those of us who are kind of in the wake of what happens with respects to decisions made by the American president and China.
And for those listening, the name sounds familiar. David Frum is the son of Barbara Frum, who was a stalwart on CBC for years and years and years, a tremendous journalist. But he has, he's American now. I think he's taken his American citizenship. He's lived down there for a long time, as you say, a political commentator, was a strategist and speechwriter. But I think what I saw a couple of news clips on CNN, and he does come on CTV regularly too, he talks about the lack of leadership that the American president is providing, not only in the country, but around the world, and the divisive nature of consolidating power through just attracting his own base, which is bad for, he talks about the institutions of American government and its place in the world.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to some degree, it's not so much the blazing type of leadership. He's really concerned about the fact that there are many leaders elected around the world. He talked a lot about Boris Johnson from England, that they don't respect the institution of government and the institution of democracy. And I think they're, you know, a lot of what he talks about is not so much the political vitriol, but more about the leadership skills that are lacking. And, you know, I think he looks at his actual explanation was, you know, we all remember it's all behind us now when we took our postgraduate degrees in college or university. But, you know, we all remember reaching into the little laundry bag of dirty shirts and picking out the least dirtiest shirt to wear the next day. And he says, well, what you can take relief in is that Canada is probably the least dirtiest shirt in the bag. So, you know, I thought it was a great parallel to what we just went through, which was, you know, we would describe it, and Perrin describes it as you know, probably the non-election of elections, and because the issues weren't discussed. But he says that, you know, it's resembled like that around the world.
Yeah, so we'll cover off that's it. We'll cover off some of those themes in our interview with Perrin. But touching, going back to the sort of technology the startup segment here in Canada, we're going to be joined, and I'm going to bring in just a few minutes Chuck Howitt, who has written a new book. He was a reporter with the Waterloo Region Record for a number of years, written a book recently called Blackberry Town, and really talks about the history and all of the, in all its aspects of Blackberry and the start of RIM and as it turned to Blackberry and its role here in the region of Waterloo, but also in that startup segment. So a great tie-in to some of the themes you were talking or hearing about at the Economic Summit.
Well, exactly. And I think one of the things that BlackBerry's working on now is, you know, a lot of artificial intelligence around autonomous vehicles. And we had a great segment yesterday on AI. Some of it would probably scare you, but really the crux of it really was, and Chuck would probably speak to this very well also, is that you know, the main theme behind AI is data.
Yep.
And, you know, we always think of it as being, well, it's a cool autonomous vehicle. It's a cool robot that does things for you that you don't want to do. But the fact of the matter is that
it's taking data.
It's about collecting data and utilizing that data to formulate how things operate within this world and how they can make it more convenient for us as employers and employees.
Well, it's going to be fascinating. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. We'll probably do a couple of segments and do one this week and next week because there's lots to cover in that book. But we're going to leave it there for now. When we come back after the break, I will be joined. We'll bring in the tape from our conversation with Perrin Beatty. Of course, he's the president and CEO of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. So we'll be back with more on Business to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance, right after the break. Welcome back to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance. And this segment's brought to you by our friends at BDC. And of course, BDC is Canada's only bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs. And as promised, Gregory, we are joined by probably our most regular guest,
yes,
our favorite guest.
But in person this time.
In person. We dragged him down from Ottawa. We're joined by Perrin Beatty. Of course, he is the president and CEO of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. And we're so pleased to have you in our midst here in Waterloo Region.
So glad to be here. It's a homecoming for me, so I'm delighted.
Well, Greg, one of the reasons, the reason he's down for today, and as we have this event on Wednesday,
We partner in a lot of ways with the Immigration Partnership of the Waterloo Region. Both our chambers do. And the partnership wanted to have someone of parent stature to come and talk about immigration and economics and job creation and how it all fits together. We talk about all the time, talent is the biggest issue for businesses across the board. And so very timely that parent's here.
And I think it's really important. Parent, you know, we almost talk about them like two different animals. Immigration down one path, and then trying to backfill the skilled trades element in Canada. But these are really harmonious issues. These are issues that are meaningful to both sides, because really, we're not going to be able to develop our own skilled trades. We need to backfill them with immigrants.
Absolutely. And the simple fact is, if you look at the birth rate in Canada, without immigration, our workforce would be shrinking. The only way that we can continue to grow our workforce is by adding to it through immigration. And this also then gives us the opportunity to get new skills that we need in Canada that supplement the skills that we have here already.
You fostered our Canadian Chamber AGM, and we passed a very important piece of policy from the Canadian Chambers of Commerce right across the country, talking about women's participation on boards and high finance institutions. But we need to be encouraging women to get involved with every aspect of business, from the very beginning of trades right through to boards and senior executive positions as well.
Absolutely. And one of the good news stories is the chamber movement itself. You know from attending AGMs how representative the executives who are there from across the country are. This week, the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade, a woman took over that. Women are running Surrey, they're running Calgary, they're running
Toronto.
Edmonton, they're running Toronto, running Saskatoon. It's an extraordinary contribution that they're making, and they're superb colleagues of ours. So the chamber in some ways is in the vanguard in terms of recognizing that these are incredible skills that we need to be able to draw on. But too often in the business community, what you find is that we default to the old boys network, and that boards are unrepresentative, and that senior management teams are unrepresentative. We've got to break that down. It's crazy when we have a skills shortage in Canada to say that 51% of the population should have restrictions on their ability to participate. If we restrict the size of the pond in which we're fishing in that way, we're not going to be able to get what we need. So we need to take away those barriers to women and to draw upon them more. We need to look at new Canadians. Mm-hmm. How do we integrate them more fully into our economy more rapidly and recognize the skills that they bring? We need to look at Indigenous Canadians whose participation rate is way below that of the rest of the population. We need to look at persons with disabilities. You know, they have enormous skills that are there, and the disability they may have, for example, mobility, shouldn't hold them back from doing other things.
Those can be accommodated to get the talent, the skills they have.
It simply requires that business understand that and that it make that accommodation. Similarly, senior Canadians, increasingly, people are living longer than ever before. They're needing the income more than ever before because they're living longer. They're healthier than ever before at an older age, and they're wanting to participate more than ever before, and yet still we are wasting a lot of the talent that's there. You take all of that, and you take improved training in terms of upgrading of skills that we have in our current workforce and in terms of business working together with the educational sector to prepare people for entry in the workforce, then you add to that immigration. Mm-hmm. And that's how we will meet the skills needs in the future. And Greg, what you were talking about is a major problem now, but it goes back many years. I remember going with you to visit one of the companies and was a member of your chamber, and the experience they were having under the Temporary Foreign Workers Program.
Yes.
This was a highly skilled person that they were bringing in. So it was going to be a brain gain for Canada.
Yep.
And they couldn't get the person in directly with the immigration program, so they had to turn to Temporary Foreign Workers Program. And there, they had to demonstrate that there was nobody else in Canada who could possibly have done the job.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to hire somebody for the short term, go to the extra expense of it, and possibly have to replace that person. That makes no sense.
No.
The best judge of what talent is needed is, in fact, the employer, not somebody in government.
Yeah. Now, you're in town and speaking to a joint chamber and immigration partnership event. That's why you're here. Talk a little bit about what you talked to the crowd today about in terms of how we marry together the importance of the talent needs right across the sector. We've just talked about all of those the gaps that we have. What was your message today to the audience of chamber and community folks here in Waterloo?
That immigration is critical to us to meet our needs, but it doesn't end with simply opening the door and saying to people, welcome to Canada, you're on your own. We need to have in place the infrastructure that helps people to integrate into our economy and to be able to make the transition as smoothly as possible. We also don't want a situation, which we see in many rural and more remote parts of Canada, where somebody may immigrate, but they find that there's nobody from their religion, there's nobody who speaks their language, they can't get food that they're used to. None of that social infrastructure is there, and that too often what you get then is somebody coming in as an immigrant and then passing through and being drawn into the big cities. We need to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place across the country that allows smaller communities to be able to benefit from immigration the same way that our major cities can.
You know, you talked about, you sent out many tweets, and Ian and I both retweeted it, and lots of people retweeted it through this past federal election, that the parties weren't talking about the issues. And one of the issues, save and except some crazy immigration ideas from some individuals, but you know, they never concentrated on this. They never talked about the business issues of the day on how do we get companies mobilized with people to grow? How do we get people integrated into society? None of those issues were covered. It seemed to be simply about things that maybe made the headlines in the Toronto Star or the Globe and Mail someday.
I think, Perrin, what it boiled down to, one of your tweets said, they're not talking about the major issues. They're all around the edges of small p, small ball. There was no big picture conversation about things that are important on talent, on immigration, all of which leads to economic growth, productivity, prosperity, and being able to pay for the social programs we have. And I didn't find that there was any discussion on any of it.
Well, and that's precisely the concern for the business community. The most important issues that we're facing in Canada, and they are urgent, are structural in nature. Do we have a 21st century workforce that we need to be competitive in a 21st century economy? Do we have the infrastructure in place that allows us to get our goods to market, or the digital infrastructure that allows us to communicate with each other and the rest of the world? Do we have a tax system that is efficient, or one that burdens business and acts as a drag on the economy? Do we have a regulatory system that works, or is it dysfunctional? And I think the answer on that is pretty clear, since we all own a pipeline, that the regulatory system hasn't worked the way it should. So the politicians talked about everything but the real issues that will affect whether or not our kids have jobs or whether Canadian families can keep a roof over their heads. The challenge for us now in this minority parliament is that in minority parliaments, people think in the short term, move into the permanent election campaign. The issues that we were talking about are longer term and structural. They require a strategy, and they require focused attention over a considerable period of time.
That doesn't lend itself to politics, usually.
No. In a majority government, you think about, where is Canada going to be 4 years from now?
Yeah.
In a minority parliament, you think about, where am I going to be 4 weeks from now?
Yeah.
So the issues become more transactional. Can I announce a new spending program, or pass a law to tweak something, and have another regulation of some sort, as opposed to how do we work together to mobilize society to deal with these issues? So the challenge for us now, with all of the problems that were there before the election, many of which have gotten worse as a result of the election, and that we're a more polarized and divided society than we were going into it, those are still there, waiting to be dealt with. And we have the instrument that we have to deal with it, that is the political parties, none of which is truly national today, if you look at their provinces. And Parliament itself, which is a minority parliament that's very divided, none of them lends itself well to dealing with these issues. So the challenge is, How do we encourage politicians to set aside all of the theater of the campaign and to talk about what's in the interest of Canadians?
And I think, Greg, you and Perrin are both going down to the Ontario Economic Summit, mm-hmm. which the Ontario Chamber of Commerce puts on an annual basis for a couple of days. I guess that's one of the stepping off points. I mean, chambers across the country, and in particular the Ontario Chamber, are going to be talking about some of these issues, about the structural big picture things that need to change. Mm-hmm. What do you expect to hear from our colleagues across Ontario at the Ontario Economic Summit?
Well, first, disappointment in the election itself.
From a content perspective.
Yep, that the issues weren't discussed. Mm-hmm. And universally, when I've been talking to people, they've said that this was a remarkably empty campaign in mm-hmm. terms of the substance, and that the politicians substituted abuse for thought. That's not a good way to go. A real anxiety, a real desire to end some of the uncertainty so we know what direction the government is going. People will be watching very closely on the 20th when the cabinet is sworn in. And they'll be watching on the 5th of December when Parliament comes back, because the speech from the throne will give a sense of direction
snapshot,
as to where people are going. The other issue, not issue, but the other substantive matter that I want to discuss with chambers across the country is one of the differences between a majority and minority parliament is that in a minority parliament, power flows back from the public service and back from the prime minister's office into the back benches, into the caucus meeting. If in a minority parliament, if 10 members of caucus come in and say to the party leader, you know, we agree with what you're trying to do, but we've been hearing from our constituents, this becomes existential mm-hmm. for the government. So you look at the big issue that we were involved in, all of us in the last parliament, of the taxation of yeah. small businesses. That took literally months for us. We ultimately won the fight, but it took months to win. In a minority parliament, it would take about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Because MPs would be hearing from their constituents. They would realize that accountability and that they could be back to the polls in the short term, and the government would have to listen to the backbenchers instead of just simply being on transmission.
So it could in fact be a positive
in some ways
if they're all willing to sit there and try and make this work over the next couple of years. There could be some successful movement.
And people talk. I think one of the points that the commentators are missing is they talk about the fact that typically a minority parliament runs for a year and a half to 2 years. That's true. But this is a very stable minority parliament. To defeat Mr. Trudeau, it would require all three of the major opposition parties to be voting on the same side.
Yeah.
And to conceive of an issue where the Bloc Québécois, the Conservatives, and the NDP were all on the same side against the Liberals requires some imagination. So all of the government needs is to have one of the opposition parties supporting it on an issue and is able to carry the vote in the House. So, you know, if they're moving left, then obviously the NDP will be there, or possibly with the support of the Greens and of the Bloc. If they're looking at something like building a pipeline or like
tax reform or.
Well, good tax. I'm worried about what sort of tax reform we're going to see. But ratification of CUSMA, the new NAFTA. The Conservatives would support that. So it's a bit like those tile games where you move the numbers around.
Yeah.
The government won't be defeated unless they want to be.
Mm-hmm. You won an award at the speech that you gave mm-hmm. from the Public Policy Forum, and I read the speech and it got great play. And I think we're blessed in this region and in this business community to have you leading, because your voice is even more important, as you talked about, internationally, but also across Canada, because those are the big things that we need to be talking about. And we hear about all of those things on a day-to-day basis here in Waterloo Region. So thank you for raising those issues, and thank you for being here in the region of Waterloo. We appreciate you being
there's certainly
on the
nobody
show.
In the business community that disagrees with what Perrin Beattie is saying and standing up for, and we certainly appreciate it.
Periodically, there is at home.
As always, it's a pleasure, and we thank you for your time and for coming down to Waterloo Region to be with us this week. We've been joined by Perrin Beattie. He is, of course, the President and CEO of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. We'll be back with more on Business to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance. right after the break.
You're listening to Business to Business, powered by Cowan Insurance Group, featuring local businesses, solutions, and success stories, connecting community through business on 570 News.
Welcome back to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance. And this segment is brought to you by our friends at BDO Southwestern Ontario. Of course, BDO is an accounting, audit, and advisory firm working with small and medium-sized enterprise here in Waterloo Region. And as promised, we are joined by Chuck Howitt. Chuck is a retired business reporter with the Waterloo Region Record and is the author of a brand new book, which is a tremendous read, called Blackberry Town, telling the story about the rise, fall, but and evolution maybe is a way to describe it, of Research in Motion, which became BlackBerry. So welcome to the show, Chuck.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you and I have known each other a long time. My days in city council, you were a business reporter, but I would periodically see you depending on what stories you'd been assigned to. So we've known each other a long time from those days. I think we talked just before going on air. You've been retired for 5 or 6 years now.
Yes.
From the Record. What led you to, you know, this has been a long-term project. How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, I started on it when I retired from the Record in 2013, the fall of 2013. Mm-hmm. I had covered RIM for the Record from 2005 to 13. I was part of a team covering the company until 2009. Then we had a few layoffs, unfortunately, so I carried on as the sole BlackBerry reporter till 2013, and I kind of had a front row seat to a really big national and international business story. And as I was covering RIM, I'd always wanted to write a book. A lot of journalists, you know, always have dreams of writing books. Most never realize that dream, but I thought, well, here's a perfect opportunity. I'm covering and writing about the company, and by 2013, it became clear that RIM was not going to be making a comeback in the smartphone race, and that happened to coincide with my departure from the Record. So I started working on this book. I was a complete amateur. I'd never written a book before, so I kind of went at it backwards. I normally pitch to publishers, and you give them an outline and an idea and see if anybody bites. Myself, not having written a book, I thought, well, I'll just write the whole thing. Then I'll see if I can get any publishers. Excuse me. So I finished it around 2017, then started looking for an agent and a publisher. And finally, I got Lorimer on board. Mm-hmm. And then we went through a period of quite a few revisions. And so basically, just to sum up quickly, I had written the book as a memoir because another book came out in 2015 called Losing the Signal. Yep. Very good book.
The Globe reporter, wasn't
yes,
it? Adrian Moore?
Two Globe reporters, Sean Silkoff and Jackie McNish.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they did an excellent job. So when I saw that, I changed my book to a memoir of covering RIM. Like, I covered all the annual meetings, the quarterlies, conferences. And so I wrote it up as a memoir. When it got to Lorimer, they said, no, we don't like the memoir format. Take yourself out, broaden the canvas to include the impact on the community and other companies in the tech sector, as well as the RIM story. So the RIM story is sort of the backbone of the book, but it's really about the community, the tech community of Waterloo and the University of Waterloo.
Well, and I think that was probably a wise decision. I was at an event that Communitech was running for its CEOs of companies that support it, and they gave away a book to everyone that attended the event because I think it does accurately tell the story. And I haven't read it cover to cover, but I've read excerpts, and you and I talked about it. I think it does cover, when I look at it, it covers the sort of arc of how it started and where it got to, which was a bright burning star, and then what happens in a lot of cases is the correction, if you want, but what it's evolved to, but as importantly, what it's meant to this community. So I'm gonna not bury the lead here. We're gonna have you on this week and next week because there's a lot to dig into here. This week, in the next few minutes, we want to talk about sort of the background, like what were the pieces that led to its rise in the community. And then when we have you back next week, we can talk about some of those other things, like what were the impacts on the community? Because there's a whole bunch of things that happened, both good and bad, as they grew. But let's focus today on what were the pieces that that led to, you know, everyone has their own view of why this is a great place to start a business, in particular a tech startup. What were the things that you identified in the book that were those critical pieces that led to the rise of BlackBerry?
Well, I mean, a lot of people said BlackBerry RIM could have started anywhere. Really, I think the main reason why it ended up here was simply the University of Waterloo. Mike Lazaridis, of course, is from Windsor. Doug Fregan, the co-founders, they could have gone anywhere to start the company, but they came to Lazaridis came to Waterloo for a reason, because he toured other universities in the province. And he got to Waterloo and he saw what they were doing in engineering, computer science, in particular the Red Room, which I talk about in the book, which was this huge, one of the biggest computer installations in Canada. We're talking 1979. Mm-hmm. It went in the 60s. And he saw this and he thought, my search is over. I'm coming to Waterloo. So, I mean, Waterloo, it was UW that attracted him to Waterloo. And then what he learned at UW also contributed greatly to the founding of RIM. He took computer science, engineering. Waterloo was a leader in Canada, even internationally. So he learned a lot from attending Waterloo. And then he decided to establish RIM in Waterloo. And then once RIM got rolling, he hired a lot of co-op students and Waterloo grads. I mean, all the early employees of RIM came from UW. So I think you can't underestimate the role of the University of Waterloo.
And what's interesting about that was more on the technical side, because in UR's business report, we would, and I knew this just from being on council, when people would say, what's special about University of Waterloo? And Laurier has its place too in Conestoga College, and they're in training people and in the business aspect. But as it relates to U of W, what separates it from most other universities, and what we talk about maybe first, is that the policy that intellectual property is owned by the founder or the developer of the. It's not owned by the university. So if you check how it design or Mike Lazaridis designs the BlackBerry, he owns the intellectual property and the patents, not the university. That was not the reason he came here originally, but it probably kept him here after he'd been at U of W. Because he got his education, and then that policy probably kept him here as he started to develop it.
Right, yeah. Well, the IP policy really came from Wes Graham, who I talk a lot about in the book. He's the father of computer science at UW. Wes has died in 99, but he came from IBM and as a young man to head up computer science at UW. So he had that business background. And his policy was, let's get the best equipment we can. Let's get the best students, the best teachers. We put it all together, and we just watch the magic happen. And the policy paid off in spades, like attracted people like Mike Lazaridis. And Wes was a big believer in this IP should go to the founder. And UW is was a leader in that. And the other thing about UW was it was a new university. Mm-hmm. So it was the title of my chapter 2, which is about UW, is called License to Be Radical. So they came in, they had a clean slate, they brought in young people with innovative ideas, and they were just one step ahead of other universities. Like, I compare it to Western, which was like an old university, but Western was kind of jealous with what was going on at UW with the co-op program. They actively resisted it.
Well, I think one of the pieces around that, the early on developing the co-op stream of saying you're going to work while you learn was one of those pieces. And I also think that what was interesting in watching this all happen is the notion that when you put it all together. And let that magic happen. That developed out of the formulation of how the university was run, how they were going to educate kids, the intellectual property, and that doesn't. It was a leader in Canada. It was probably the first in Canada to have any form of that, which really I think, settled that entrepreneurial gene that's now here in the Waterloo and really baked in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's... Yeah, it really sort of was a great example for, you know, young students coming in, and it it sort of fueled that entrepreneurial spirit. And a lot of startups really got their start at UW because they encourage that kind of stuff. But.
Listen, I know we've just scratched the surface. We're leave it here for today, but when we come back next week, we're going to, I hope you'll come back, and you've already agreed to, but we want to talk about all those other pieces. What were the impacts? What were some of the other companies that developed? What were both the good and bad things that happened here in the region of Waterloo as it evolved? And then, you know, the outcome of the story, it's still a good news story in the totality, and I want to really drill down on that. So we'll look forward to having you back next week.
Okay. Thanks, Ian.
All right, we've been joined by Chuck Howard. He, of course, is a retired business reporter from the Waterloo Region Record. But more importantly, he is the author of a brand new book called Blackberry Town, telling the story of Blackberry here in the region of Waterloo. We'll be back with more on Business to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance, right after the break. Welcome back to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance. And as God would have it, we're joined by Teresa Norris-Lew. And, of course, she is the Vice President of Pension and Retirement Consulting at Cowan Insurance Group. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Ian.
We want to talk about something that will never happen for me because, you know, I got divorced and I did a number of things that were not recommended if you want to retire.
Yes.
But it might be because you're so old and advanced age right now. You might be heading towards retirement.
Well, of course. We all are, I guess, sometime.
But we want to get some advice on a couple of aspects of getting ready for retirement as we think about that. One, this week we want to talk about some of those personal sides of financial aspects.
I think that's what's interesting. This subject is really interesting, Teresa, because especially as I advance in age, I meet all kinds of people who are younger than me who have retired.
Really?
Older than me who are still not even thinking about retiring. And, you know, you're always thinking, well, what is the determining factor? And, of course, you know, our monthly income or yearly income is going to kind of drop when we retire because we're not in the production stage anymore of our life. So how do you really figure that out? What do you do as a professional to work with individuals who are saying, I want to retire, I don't know whether I can?
So we meet with a lot of individuals as well, Greg, as you've said, some who have given this more thought than others, some who, from a financial perspective, are more prepared than others. But I think the key to all of this is planning. And it's planning with someone, a financial advisor that you trust is the number one thing. It's starting early. It's considering all aspects of that financial piece of retirement. And when I say all aspects, you know, there's government programs that are available through Canada Pension Plan and Old Age Security. There's potentially your organization that you work for may or may not have a plan, but if they do, it's taking full advantage of those programs. And then, of course, it's your personal savings on top of that to supplement, you know, what you'll need. But I think that probably the most frightening thing that we see is people who, you know, are contemplating retirement in the next 18 to 24 months but haven't thought of any of that financial piece.
Yeah.
And they come to us with, you know, low amounts in those two tiers I talked about, whether that be employer or personal. And then it's a struggle to get them to where they need to be from a financial perspective. So, I mean, number one piece of advice, I think, is just start early and work with someone that
When you say early, at my young age as opposed to Greg's advanced age, I mean, I've been, you know, many of us now won't have company pension plans. You may have RSPs or matching programs, but you're effectively saving for yourself, especially small business owners where their business might be their retirement. Is that the type of thing where you put all of those pieces on the table with you and your staff that are working with individuals to figure out what their capacity to retire is and how to put together those government programs like CPP and OAS and maybe your RSP and all of those aspects and figure out, is that what you're describing? And the earlier you do that, so you have a game plan moving forward?
Absolutely. And it's not only making sure that you have those financial pieces organized, but it's also taking a look at how much do I need to retire? Mm-hmm. And people ask that all the time. And the answer to that is really, it depends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it depends what you want your lifestyle to be.
It depends what you want to do. Yeah.
You know, your lifestyle really changes, right? So you're out of business now. You're retired. You know, a lot of those normal everyday expenses kind of disappear. And I think that's why it's really important to sit down with a professional, say, to understand what retirement is going to look like from a financial perspective, and then look at what my options are. So are my options, you know, to maybe preserve, not start taking my CPP until a little later time so that I'll have that elevated income and use some other resources. So it's really important to sit down with a professional that understands all those attributes. And I think you can't do it soon enough. You need to sit down. 18 months is not a really wide window for you to look at. You should be 5 to 7 years out.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's maybe the last question before, and then next week we'll talk about some of the other aspects of getting ready to retire. So when you talk planning early enough, there's the planning for I may want to retire in 24 months, taking what you've already accumulated and figuring out how you know, take which pieces at which time. But maybe even before that, you got to start thinking about that now in terms of actually putting money aside or planning for if my retirement is my business, you better be thinking about how am I going to sell that business. I mean, those are the things that have to happen well in advance of you picking your date 18 or 24 months in advance. That's another part of that, talking early with the professional.
Yeah, and it's and that piece of it is tougher and tougher as we, you know that more young people are coming out of school with astronomical amounts of debt. So, you know, the whole save early is easy for us to say, but it's difficult for, you know, some folks to do. And on the flip side, back to Greg's point, you know, I think it's also, there's a bit of a shift in, it used to be that when you hit that retirement age of 65, which was standard, you know, most people had their mortgage paid off, their kids were out and on their own. But more and more now we're finding that that piece of people's lives is also stretching longer and longer. Mm-hmm. So that whole question about how much will I need depends on all those factors, right? Your debt, what you want things to look like, and what you want to do. So, I mean, all of that comes into the retirement planning.
Well, and that is a good place to leave it, because it is the right place to leave it, which is when you're thinking about these things like retirement, you need to talk to a professional that can help you. Yep. And in this case, a good friend of the show, call the folks at Cowan now, and there's always someone there, whether it's you or one of your staff, to help you walk through all of those questions that you need to get so that you can be prepared for retirement. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been joined by Teresa Norris-Liu. She is the Vice President of Pension and Retirement Consulting at Cowan Insurance Group. Out of time, Gregory.
Yes, great show, Ian. We have just two events coming up. We have Monday night, we have our business after hours at National R&D. And on November the 26th, we've got our community awards at the Hamilton Theater in Cambridge.
Okay. And our friends at Junior Achievement are having their Hall of Fame Entrepreneur, or the Entrepreneur Hall of Fame dinner on November the 21st. I think there's still tickets available. You can go to website to find that. We also have upcoming events over the next 10 days, our Chamber Young Professionals, our Business After Five, and a couple of other events. So go to CambridgeChamber.com or GreaterKWChamber.com for all that information. And I should point out, we will have the third in a three-day series called our Trade Accelerator Program that you and I have been working on with our friends from the Toronto Toronto Board of Trade and Toronto Global. Fabulous. We've had a great pick up on that. And that's for companies that are really looking to accelerate their trade both nationally and across the globe. So we'll have more on that in the coming weeks. But we're out of time for this week. We'll be back next week with another edition of Business to Business on 570 News, powered by Cowan Insurance.